You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Yellow.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, episode 20, The Final Mission from the Boss.
Well, the B check, loyalty to your country or loyalty to me?
So, yes, the final mission from the boss is more complicated rules.
You gotta get aboard within 15 minutes to this island. Only one of them are allowed to go off the boat. One of them and Trish.
Yes.
Whoever the bodyguard is. Because the boss is like, I don't know if you guys are going to be dead or what, so...
Whoever one is it alive, just come on up.
You got to get to the top of this tower. I assume this is an actual island in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
I presume so.
As opposed to like the giant fucking battlefield of spikes that we also know is in Venice. It's somewhere off the coast.
Yeah. This is San Giorgio Maggiore. I'm sure I'm murdering that pronunciation. Second thing is from the Venice Insider, why it's worth your visit. Because you can be attacked by your... You can accidentally attack yourself.
That's not a good reason to go.
But where else in the world can you do that? It's like...
I don't want
road.
To do that.
it's like one of those roads where water flows uphill.
Well, that's not good to my experience of water flow.
Where else can you do it? You know, boring old water flowing down and down an angle slope.
That would be preferable.
Also, your blood will float around the one direction after you get punched in the face by the boss's enemy stand.
So it's initially like the lads, like they're really kind of like, well, I guess we've all won. Goodbye, boss. I'm sure everything will be happy forevermore.
Right, yes. That's because...
And it's just like, oh my God, you're really laying it on thick, lads.
And that's because it's only Giorno who knows the secret plan.
Yeah, because Giorno's like, I'll be the bodyguard. And he's like, we have to convey this conversation through voiceovers because we can't actually have this conversation out loud right now.
There's like a series of blinks.
A series of knowing stares. I mean, like, the lads in the boat must have been like, are these two fucking...
There's lots of diagrams and cutaways in this as well of the church.
How elevators work.
Yes.
There's one elevator that goes up.
Yeah.
That's a pretty modern church.
Well, yeah, you gotta have, like, access for the less able to walk. You know, go up all those stairs? No.
There is no stairs. That's the point. Like, there's only an elevator up to the tower. That's why I'm saying it's very modern, like, that it didn't even include stairs.
They were pretty forward thinking back in the Renaissance, weren't they?
I guess so.
Giorno gives him a good luck charm, wink wink, of one of his brooches.
Giorno, can I have that ladybug? I hear they're lucky or something.
Yes.
Sure.
I'll be back in a moment. I just need to deal with something. Carry on.
And like the plan is to use that as a tracking device, not for any other thing, right?
That's correct, yes. They're going to put the living giant ladybird.
I assume it's a living ladybird inside the brooch or something, because it still looks like the brooch. It's just pulsating horribly.
And they'll use that to be able to track the boss once he puts it on.
Because Giorno will know where his power is taking place, I think is the logic.
Something like
he
that.
He seems to have some idea, like, because when that snake bit the guy in the train station that they were miles away from at that stage, he's like, yep, the snake did the job.
And people's shoes returned to them if they turned into an animal.
So he will know where his button is, that kind of thing? A reverse of that, I guess, yeah.
They go in the church, him and Trish, get in the elevator, but then Trish starts to have second thoughts.
There's a bit of a panic attack kind of before the elevator, and calms her down and goes like, listen, there's probably a guy, this guy's got the kind of money that'll just, you know, require you to change your name, maybe get plastic surgery or something, but he'll put you someplace safe, because that's the kind of clout this boss has.
Yeah.
It's all going to be fine.
And she holds his hand for reassurance, And
yeah,
then,
acting tough, but still scared, obviously.
As the elevator's reaching the top of the tower, he suddenly realizes, presumably, hang on, there's not so much weight on this hand I'm holding anymore. And he's only got her severed arm in his hand.
Yeah, and he's like, the fuck is happening here? And is that the point where we get his flashback?
It is, yes.
Yes. Because he was the only guy to not get one so far, yeah.
Yeah, because this becomes like, it's all about...
It's breaking point, I suppose?
Yeah, it's fathers and children. We learned that...
Hmm.
Yeah, when he was it 12 or younger? Anyway, yeah, they're getting divorced, his parents are getting divorced, and he decides to stay with his father because his reasoning is that his mum can survive without him, but if he leaves his father,
his mum's got a good head on her shoulders, whereas yes. His dad is kind of like this lonely guy, keeps to himself, doesn't talk much kind of thing.
Yes.
So he's like, yeah, he kind of needs me more than you do, mum. And he was right. She got married within like 2 years and only started visiting on Christmas. Yes.
And his dad's a fisherman.
Like, oh, that's sad.
And then his dad's taking a couple of shady... He's having to make more money. He's having to like take people on boat trips.
Yeah, he saw what his son kind of gave up for him going to the big city and getting into college and everything. So he says, oh, fuck, I better make more money to get my son into college. But he has to take on tourists and ne'er-do-wells when they ask you to, come on, old man, just take us to the island. What's the big problem?
yeah, a couple of shady guys. And then he apparently gets shot when he witnesses a drug deal going down, and they try and finish the job in the hospital, but Bruno's been hiding underneath his father's bed and murders the pair of them.
Yeah. And so he figures, like, basically it's, and I love the narrator going like, yes, he was very lucky. His father got shot, but he didn't get hit anywhere vital. And the boat that found him had all the vital equipment to keep him alive enough for the hospital. But this didn't work out for Giorno, because it kind of basically gave him no choice. He has to join the mafia because they're the only guys who can keep him out of jail and protect his family.
That's fine, because he feels like they're the one cause of justice in the town.
Until being an enforcer, he has to like give a guy a stern talking to, hey, don't be doing that kind of crime around here. We don't take kindly to it. And the dude's like, all right, I'll sell my drugs out for drugs. Drugs are what killed my father. I'm so mad about this.
Yeah, because he's like, father died like 5 years later or something.
Yeah, a short time after the hospital, just due to complications. Yeah. So, I mean, like, even though it did work out for him, it only, like, he had to join the mafia, and still his dad only got 2 extra years of life out of it. So, sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks.
He's like, oh, no, the boss was just planning on killing Trish, because that was his one weakness, the one person who could get to him. So if he kills her, then...
I presume it's because Trish, whatever stand she has, would be a hint as to the boss's stand or something.
Maybe.
That's my guess. She knows nothing about her dad, so what the fuck is the problem here?
Don't know, DNA, maybe?
I suppose that's true, yeah. That's a definitive proof he can't really hide.
Yeah, because we've already had a character who could use DNA with his stand, so...
Yeah, you're right.
So he pursues him, he sort of escapes the lift by using his zippers...
Like, the boss appears to have, like, cut his way through the elevator without anybody noticing.
Yeah, he's gone into the crypt below the church.
Hmm.
What they call it, the charnel house, I think is what he refers it. It's like, oh, these churches always had, like, a charnel house below.
Yeah.
And he lies in wait for the boss. And the boss is like, you didn't have to do this, Bruno. Thought you were going to be a good capo, and here you are. You've taken things personally.
Yeah, he's given him, like, if you come out from behind that pillar, you will die, and, like, just walk away right now, and we're still going to be cool.
There's been too much violence. Just walk away.
Yeah, pretty much. I did like the variation on the boss, because he's actually standing behind his stand, rather than the stand traditionally, you know, kind of...
Yes.
Like, basically hiding behind his own guy. it fits into his whole don't look at me kind of thing.
They pay no attention to the man behind the psychic apparition.
Oh yeah, and the way where he finds the boss is because he'd zipped a cell phone inside himself, which is another thing he wasn't supposed to do. Was bring.
Yeah. Don't bring any cell phones. You didn't say I could bring them in a pocket dimension inside myself.
Yeah. So it is like, I guess you can decide whether the zipper will just go through the whatever surface you put it onto, or we can just go through the some kind of layer in
negative
between
space.
Things.
Yeah.
It's Roadrunner logic, isn't it? It's like
it's JoJo's logic, yes. It's whatever the fucking Araki says it does. Yes.
He rings up Giorno and it basically says, gets Giorno to tell him where the boss is based on where the,
Cause Giorno's looking at a map of the place.
Yes.
So he can tell what pillar he's hiding behind based off looking at the map. So he's like, he's hiding behind that pillar, but don't do it. There's something slightly weird. But Bruno doesn't have time to listen to that.
it's right above you, but that's impossible. Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, kind of.
He goes to strike, but the figure that he struck, he realizes himself.
He was hiding behind the pillar that he hit. Wait, what?
Well, I think King Crimson explains that it's Bruno's
future
self.
I mean, he explains
self.
It, but still, you hit yourself from after... You hit yourself in the future from when you were behind the pillar after you hit the pillar.
Yeah.
I think? Was that how it worked?
Something like that,
Prepare to get very confused.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm always prepared for that.
I feel like I got the grasp of it, but then it's... from reading the comic, but then... It does some other things that doesn't fit in with the initial explanation of it, and then it's like you need to rework a couple of those points, and then you get a kind of here's the best unified theory we have for it, but it's still not quite perfect. It's only a theory, not like a law of nature.
That's the best way.
Yeah, so I feel like that is probably JoJo's key flaw is the recurring stands. Their rules aren't consistent, whereas like a one-shot stand,
it does one thing, and it doesn't get to do anything further than that because the guy generally gets fucking retired or killed.
Yeah,
yeah. I think also she probably gives the villain, the main villain, a power that doesn't involve time manipulation.
That's like the cheapest power, man. You gotta give the baddie the cheapest power.
Yeah, but he had the world. That made sense. You can stop time and then you can just kind of punch dudes up under frozen.
Or move things around.
You've had bites to dust, which will blow up anybody who disrupts the time flow as dictated by Kira. And then you got this King Crimson, which is work. It's a little bit like that one Discworld that you got gone down the wrong path leg of time. You had to go
down
the one end of it, and
you got to make your way back to the
crotch. Walk back around and go back around the right path leg of time and go down that way instead.
Mm-hmm. it's a confusing one, but I'm prepared to get even more confused than this. So.
Yeah, I think it's seven. Well, I don't know. I'm not even sure who the main villain is in eight. But seven is like spatial rather than time, isn't it? So that's
okay.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that would be. I might have. Which one? The villain in six. I think his stand is trying to. Is the stand power or is something other different? He's trying to fucking bring Dio back from the dead anyway. That's his whole deal, to know whether his stand is related to that or not, which could be, because go back in time and just bring him back from the past and bring it into the present day.
The best kind of healing is to stop the damage before it happened. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like maybe like a lot of people were confused this about King Crimson to this day. So maybe I should probably lay off the whole time travel thing for a while. Yeah, I think I've explored every avenue I can with it.
Yeah, you might have taken the criticism on board for too much time travel. What's the other subtitle for King Crimson? Is it Emperor Crimson or something?
Yeah,
I forgot what the fake one was. The off-brand one. Yeah, fuck, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's weird design with like the head on the forehead.
It looks a little extra face.
Yeah, it looks really kind of ridiculous for how like threatening and powerful it is.
I think it's the teeth, like that mouth. It's kind of like creeping me out.
at his angry face.
And it has an extra angry face on top of its face, so that makes it worse, yeah.
It might try to disarm you before it punches you by both now and in all possible timelines.
Yeah, he's Emperor Crimson in the Crimson.
Okay, okay. I wasn't sure whether they went with a, did they go with a different kind of nobility or a different shade of red? I knew they did one or the other, but not both.
Duke Claret. Viscount Vermilion.
Oh, that would have worked, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this. I was quite impressed about the sleight of hand it appeared to have played on me in that I hadn't realized we hadn't had Bruno's flashback yet.
Yeah, yeah, we're so far away from doing everyone's backstory that you think it's like, yeah, we're good, we got all the backstory. It's like, oh shit, we actually haven't gotten this main guy's one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's been present, you know, like a central, a pivotal figure in a lot of other flashbacks. You feel you have the measure of his character based on those, but there's more depth to him still that's uncovered here.
Yeah, yeah, and it even gives him like more context as to why he gathered this group together based off his own past. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter calling him like one of the best JoJo's moms, and it's like, yeah, he's kind of like he's trying to be a good parent to all these wayward Utes. He's a good character. But it's unfortunate he's totally dead now.
Yeah, it's punched in the stomach, dead, never to be seen again.
Yes,
I mean, like,
definitely dead.
I've never seen someone recover from anything like that in JoJo's before.
Yeah, like, you know, like, it's never going to grow that layer of skin back on his hand that got frozen off. No, that's all completely gone.
He's a digit down as well, yeah, yeah.
About Hugo cutting his hand off, yeah, that didn't make a fist at all. you get from multiple guys, you can, like, sort themselves out. With Brook and just, like, be attached things, and then Jorno can just take care of any of the other weird surgical stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I assume he's getting very fucked up from this based off, you know, getting punched through the chest. That's generally not good. Or the sternum, wherever the fist comes out, I can't remember now. It's pretty gross.
Well, if you got your own knife hand, and you know, when the bad guy does knife hand, that's going to go straight to someone's chest. You always do that.
Righty-ho. That's JoJo's for this week. Next week's episode is called...
Mystery of King Crimson.
Excellent.
So we're going to get more confused about how it works, yeah.
We've still got the one remaining member of the Hitman Squad to be dealt with as well at some point.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's on the way, I think, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there are more guys that you just haven't seen.
No, but it's like the guy with the prison tattoo eyes.
Oh, there is Risotto Nero.
Yeah,
but there are other dudes, but
just off the squad we've already seen.
Yeah, but I suppose the other dudes could be guys who've been hired by the boss to hunt down the rest of them now that they're aware of his grand scheme. So. I forget how it goes down. Anyway,
double secret hitman team.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, we're halfway through the stories. We gotta find more stand users. Ran out of tarot cards. These guys are based off of, I don't know, fucking Magic the Gathering cards.
We've ran out of bands. How is that possible? Ah, fuck it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's fashion in part six, isn't it? It's
excellent.
Righty-ho, that's all there is about JoJo this week, but what about all the other stuff we watched, which was mainly Boogie Pop, but there were some other things which weren't Boogie Pop as well. Starting with Monday's Dororo, episode 7, The Story of the Jorogumo Silk Spider.
And that's the only reason I can remember the name of that monster, that they have the little flashcards at the end of the episode.
Is that right?
It's in the title for once.
I know that sort of monster because I think it's in one of the monster books for 13th Age, and it's definitely one of the monsters in Rising Sun.
I figured it was just giant spider monster. I didn't think it was traditional giant spider monster.
Yes, it's traditional giant spider monster.
There was a monster in Okami, the video game, as well.
Yeah, I never got that far.
Oh.
It was like the second boss you fight in the game. Come on.
Like I said, never got that far. It was one of those games I was buying like the dirt cheap tail end of PlayStation 2, and it was like, I'd already passed my patience for video games. That seemed like a very long game.
Oh yeah, it's like Zelda long, you know?
Yeah. This one is this the worst episode so far of Dororo? I mean, I liked a lot of the stuff in it, but it felt like it dragged to me.
I feel like the way Dororo was trying to get your man is like, hey, come on, I haven't heard you laugh. It's like, I'm trying to get the plot back going, but you know, they're like, based off the shit that went down, they're not really up for it. It's like, oh, we're going to a new town and there's a monster. Let's see if we can sort out the problem. And it's like they're not really in the flow as characters within the plot. Yeah. So it's mostly focused on the villain, weirdly enough.
Yeah, I like the character animation of Dororo a lot in this episode. But the story is basically, there is this Jorogumo monster who they briefly fight at the start,
She's like eating some guy who is like, I'm gonna leave my wife for you, baby.
Yes. Dororo is not impressed by these people who initially appear to be having sex in the trees. So Dororo throws loads of rocks at them.
Well, like, he thinks they're in the bushes initially, which is fair. Like, not halfway up a web in a tree, which is how it turns out to be.
Basically saying, get a room.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a free forest, man.
they rescue the guy, but he's kind of all blissed out. Hmm. And monster gets away. Then they end up at this quarry.
Yeah, some quarry village where they have to have like a pass so you can leave the town because there's been kidnappings of people.
Yeah, well, this guy, once you check in, you don't check out because, A, we need guys to fucking work in the quarry for slave wages. Also, it's dangerous out there. So you better stay here and work in the quarry for slave wages. It's for your own good.
Yeah, yeah. And the lads are just like, oh, brilliant. There's a reward for, like, whoever finds the kidnapper, inverted commas, which we know is a monster. So we'll totally catch the monster, get the reward, and we won't have to do any fucking mining work.
Meanwhile, the monster's been found by this kind man who works at the quarry, who it slowly... You slowly realise, oh no, there's like a conversation between this kid and the old man. He's basically, they say, oh yeah, no one's ever going to give up who the real kidnapper is. Cause they're
no stitches.
Yeah, they basically explain that he's sneaking people out of this hellhole.
Mm.
And there isn't actually any kidnapping going on.
Yeah. Oh, so you can tell, like, the Spider Woman is kind of laid up. She's eating, like, the food that make, the fried rice that the dude is making. But this is pretty good, but I need human life force to sustain me, so I'm slowly starving. So I'm just kind of going to lay here all day until you get back home. So obviously, it can't be her. There must be somebody else out doing it.
Yeah. I did like the thing of her kind of going, like, I need to feed on human life force. I will take on a human form. I'll trick him into bringing me home. And then, oh shit, this fried rice is fucking amazing.
And this guy treats all life as being equal.
Yeah. I thought he's going with like the full, they're not Satan as such, but like a Buddhist philosophy kind of thing. Yeah.
I like the bit when she's telling that fly that's her food. Don't sit on it.
After like webbing him and eating him, it's like, mine. It's your own.
And so, yeah, there's kind of like a bit of a conflict towards the end. It's like, oh, the moral dilemma. This man and this spider are in love, but she's a monster, a ghoul.
And you have the thing of Dororo not initially, he's not attacking her straight away. So it's like, there's a variation on the color of demon. It's like, well, if they're a little brown, they're good. But if they go red, they've got like murderous intent, and then he just kind of steps in to kill him kind of thing. But it's also the fact that he can hear now is affecting what he's doing, because they're like, hey, don't kill her, because I don't think you should. And he's like, well, that wasn't the problem before, where I had to listen to fucking people tell me not to kill him.
Yeah, but that's kind of it now. That now he's getting more senses back. He has more context.
Hmm. It's not all abstracts he's dealing with. He's dealing with like people with their specific things and everything. And he can actually make choices like, should I kill the monster? I mean, like, she is a spider monster, but as we find out, she doesn't eat people. She just eats a little bit of people, because it'd be stupid if she just ate a person, because then there'd be no more people to eat.
Yeah,
I'll eat a little bit of life force, and then I let him go.
If I honestly, like, no, it's to that end. We get a cab, which is good. You can see down the line that as he gains those senses back and gets more context for the things that he's facing, how that can be used against him. When he meets his fucking shitbag dad again, and even though you can see that the guy has got a red taint to him, the things he's saying might make Yakimaru, like, reconsider his actions. So you can kind of see, as Preston mentioned, that he gets more of his bits back, he can become more vulnerable. Not just in a physical sense, but also possibly in a kind of a mental and emotional sense as well.
I was wondering, were they kind of going to try to play the story of, obviously that we're not supposed to take that side in it, but are they going to do the thing of, it's maybe it's a good thing you sacrifice this one kid to save an entire thing, and maybe it's a bad thing if he gets all his senses back, if an entire community is ruined because of it, that kind of thing. I feel like we're not supposed to be on that side, but it's probably going to draw that into question, or at least confront Hyakumaru with that.
Yeah. Was this quarry being run by his dad's country, or was this a different country?
I don't have a fucking clue. I keep forgetting the name of his place. And like, was he one of the armies at war in the last fucking episodes? I don't fucking know. There's so much shittiness in this world. Maybe.
Don't know.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit again, Niall.
Corrupt daimyo, like, I don't know why it's doing that, but it's like kind of corrupt 517. I don't know what number we're on right now. They're all corrupt.
Yeah, it's hard to tell if you're dealing with the same guy or like a different.
Yeah, so I wasn't quite sure if we. I think we generally have only seen like the court of his dad's country.
I was full sure when his dad said he was at war with his neighbors now that was the war we were seeing in the last episodes.
Yes.
But I might have just fucking like inferred that or implied it, whichever version of that word that is.
This is the Sengoku period, I think, or so. It's
yeah, it could have been any number of war.
Be kind of ongoing, like.
Oh, we've lost you entirely now, Niall.
What the fuck?
Have you got the MP3 Skype recorder?
I don't actually.
Okay.
Even updated Skype before I got on here. So
same. That's why it was slow. Weird.
My point was, I'm not sure we'd actually seen what the general population of his province think of him as a leader.
Yeah, I think we're only getting glimpses of him, like the last day where the people were excited that it was about to rain, and then that guy with the bucket.
Yes.
That kind of thing, we're kind of getting glimpses. But like you say, it's mostly staying in the court, among his family and retainers and that kind of thing, yeah.
Which again makes it hard to tell, like, who's...
Was this a sacrifice worth it kind of thing?
Yes. Like, is having...
Was it worth sacrificing your firstborn son to demons?
Yeah, to end up with a town full of people who are essentially slaves. Working at a quarry.
Yeah, yeah. Were his people doing better than the people we've seen so far?
But there's plenty of episodes, so they may get into that.
Yeah.
I think, I want to say this is an original story. I don't think this one was in the comic. And there's definitely going to have to be original stories, because...
Again, like, because it's Tezuka and he's done so much fucking shit. I feel like I've seen this kind of thing before. Is who's the real monster? You know, that kind of thing. It was like, well, if a monster is not going to actually eat people, then it's not that bad, is it? That kind of thing. And again, the strong Buddhist philosophy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also my brain's comparing it to the characters in other shows we watched this week.
Sure.
But I still like it just for being like a brief spot of levity after some unrelenting bleep. In the last few episodes.
I felt like the Roro was specifically like that at the start of the episode where he's just trying to get Hyakumaru to laugh. Cause it's like, hey, how about we have a fucking laugh kind of thing, you know, fucking get back on the monster hunting kick. He's trying to get the plot like rolling along, like the, you know, hit an island and then move on to the next plot, the next episode, thing, but it's not quite working. Yeah, we do need the kind of the lighter thing and that there is hopefulness, I suppose. I think it probably needed that, especially.
Yeah,
like I said,
the punchline is that Hyakumaru does laugh, but not in the way that Zoro wanted him to laugh.
Not at me.
A little smirk.
Good.
Next up, Mob Psycho 102, Episode 7, Cornered, True Identity. In which Reagan is cornered, and his true identity is made public. That of not being psychic.
And of being very maimable, so that's true to life as well, yeah.
Yep. Oh, he gets fucking got good. Oh, and it is,
I mean, like, I feel a little bad for him, but not fucking much.
Half an hour.
You know?
Yeah, so they wheel out this kid for him to exercise. Sorry, Niall, I was talking all over you because I could barely hear you there. What were you saying, Niall?
Fuck's sake.
Nothing. Keep...
Okay. So they wheel out this kid for him to exercise.
He's supposed to be three-man to exercise. He was like, oh no, I'm going to give the young fellow a shot at it. Oh, oh, oh. It's like, you son of a bitch. He's got this all set up.
And Regan's like making correct deductions and things based on what he's seeing, but he kind of puts on too much of a show, as it turns out.
Yeah, he thinks it's all fake for TV anyway. This kid is an actor, so if I pretend to do an exorcism, the kid's going to be like, oh, the ghost is gone, I'm better. And he's like, brilliant. But he spends, like, what is it, like half an hour?
Just half an hour, yes.
They're like, come on, dude, get up, we're live. Get your shit together.
He's trying all the moves.
He has to improvise a bunch of them, like,
massage.
Ghost, chop, pretending to punch the kid. The kid is, like, rolling with the punches and everything, so it's like, yeah, okay, I know he's acting, so why isn't he fucking reacting to having the ghost come out of him?
He came to kid a cheeseburger tornado, whatever the hell that is. It's bound to work, right? Yeah, I might go back and just like just pause and that screen as all the tech names flow by and see what the best ones in there.
There's a lot of like plausible stuff in this. I had to pause as well on all their different versions of the Mob Psycho version of all social media. That was pretty great.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like Psycho Book kind of thing. Oh, that was great.
And then I've forgotten the head of the Psychics Union takes over after half an hour.
Yeah, he just steps in and is like, this kid's acting. Nothing for me to exercise here. And then just roast Reagan about it.
Yes. And the host goes, yeah, well done. You spotted that he was a fake. Yes, this is, he's from, it was like Mongolian school of acting or something.
Yeah, like a very specifically named thing.
And then the celebrity is like, oh, well, in which case, that terrible Regan was just torturing him for half an hour. He wasn't really possessed.
Yeah, and the guy who's like the sci-fi expert is like, the fuck were you doing, bud? And he's just like, I thought the ghost came in there, like,
It's gone now because I exercised. That's why you're not seeing anything. It's like, no, I wasn't there to begin with. Looked like a fucking idiot. Like, no, I'm not owned.
Yeah, and I know these guys are just as bad, and especially the fucking the head of the Psychics Union. Do you not have anything better to do? But basically Reagan was the guy who's been tricked here. But yeah, it is the kind of trying to catch out a fake psychic, and they did find one. So yeah.
Yeah, which I'm sure was like. It definitely feels like it's influenced by James Randi's various putting so-called psychics in a position where they can't actually perform their tricks.
Or like, I've seen that. Fuck, actually, you know what? I think, like, what was it? Last week's fucking John Oliver was about fake psychics.
Uh-huh.
That's fucking coincidental. Shit. Yeah, we're one of those trying to catch the psychic shows. Or catch the fake, obviously.
Yeah.
Because that's a scam a lot of people run besides Reagan.
And so then, yeah, his popularity plummets after it's been built to these great heights. Now there's loads of people who know him, so now more people can be turn against him.
Yeah, and he's trying to go on message boards under aliases and fucking like, I better cut this off at the pass. And it's just like, oh, everyone has him down. He's like, damn it, they've identified me.
It's like, that Reagan guy's pretty cool and handsome. It's like, this sounds probably Reagan right now, isn't it? Go home, loser. Like, no. No, I'm the con man. This
isn't
how it works.
Social media savvy is not helping him here.
And you can't go to the local bar and try and like, run grips on any of those guys because they've seen him on tape and just ask him to leave. He said, no, I just want to come here and drink. Yeah, right. Get out of here, buddy. We don't want your kind in here.
And we see various of our other cast members like reacting to it. Mainly like the guys who were at the Scar base from the end of last season.
Mm, who are like, oh no! Because they all believed in him and his miraculous powers.
They still do.
The kids. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very marginally psychic, kid club.
You know. Well, I mean, they got more powers than Reagan. I did like kind of the bit with Mob and his friend from the paranormal club. It's like, hey, did you work for that guy? Cause that guy's like a faker. And he's like, it's all part of his plan. I have the utmost faith in him.
They're staking out his, office. And so he decides to hold a press conference. Which he then proceeds not to prepare for in the slightest. Just thinking.
Well, he did print out his mam's press release.
Just read this out verbatim and everything.
And then bow for 3 minutes uninterrupted. And then come back to yourself, my dad. He doesn't say much, but he's very worried about you.
Dear.
Just the desperation of him hitting the print button. I was just like, ah, no, don't do it.
And he kind of answers questions pretty honestly and bluntly.
They're surprised that he's answering questions. He's just like, oh, fuck, he's just giving us straight answers. Okay, let's keep this going.
But then he hasn't answered the most important question. Why am I even doing this for?
Well, yes. Yeah, because he remembers that we get his secret origin of where he used to be. Worked in office. He was very good at his job, very attentive. He just got bored, so he quit. Bought an office
without his own business / without knowing what business he was going to set up.
He'd been the psychic, one of these, he's basically his psychic job was basically just being a masseur. So after a year, he was going to quit and then he met Mob and then he realizes, oh, that's what I need to say is just tell Mob that he's doing a great job and he's grown up great.
I did like that whole scene, the bit with him going like, because it's initially like, oh, I guess I'll just quit this job. Kid comes to the door, he's like, ah, oh, this kid's fucking with me. Oh, this kid is either a pathological liar, I think he says, or has like living in a fantasy world. I'll just give him some fucking trite advice and help him out a little. And then the kid turns out to be psychic. He's like, I could use that. So it's nice that his thing with Mob is initially coming from a place of kindness, but then also straight away exploiting
him. Yeah. Well, I look at it the other way is like, when I see like an opportunity here, like an exploit, but at the same time, this child has kind of been troubled by the things he can do and he's just not sure what to do about it. He has a space that he can feel comfortable in using his abilities in and someone that he feels able to talk to who will believe him and listen to him.
I mean, like, yeah, it's Reagan from the start. He is absolutely running a grift, but he's doing it also helping people. So is it that bad a thing?
That's the key thing. And we've also had enough clues of it throughout the series. It was like, particularly at the start of this one, when we learned that he's vastly undercharging compared to all the other professional psychics.
He does not know what he's doing.
But he puts their minds at ease. And they feel better about it.
Yeah, even when they have like the shots of the different characters we've seen, they're like, oh man, we ought to complain about Reagan. It's like, yeah, but he didn't okay by us, that kind of thing. His former customers are like, yeah, I don't really have a problem with him though. He solved my problem. Like he said in the press conference, all those cases have been closed. That kind of thing. I gave that woman a massage to get rid of the ghosts and she felt better. What's the problem?
Yeah, like I may not have actually been haunted by an evil spirit, but I was treated very well and charged at a reasonable rate and it did alleviate my anxieties about other things. So, you know, it could be like a big placebo effect, but it's still a powerful effect and it worked for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not, there's nothing like malign or bad about it, really.
And when he's put his message out to mob, all the electrical equipment in the press conference starts floating around the room.
They all start freaking out. It's like, oh my God, is this because your spiritual power? It's like, are we done with this press conference? All right, press conference over. Good day, everyone. Kind of nearly drops the mic, kind of.
Yeah, oh, well,
no,
yeah.
The mic's flying through the air. It's just going to drop itself.
No, but he puts it down gently, yes. Basically. It's just like, put that in your pipe, motherfuckers, yeah. Kind of thing. Without really rubbing it in. It's just like, yeah, this is going to get him more business.
There's a necessarily ambitious shot during that, because a lot of the footage of the things floating through the air are taken by a camera which is also floating through the air. So it's
yes. Cool though.
It is, yes.
But like, I did like the guy sitting at home eating the bag of chips and he's like, what the fuck is this? That's bullshit. And I was like, dude, that was a really cool special effect if that was a special effect. What are you talking about?
And then he runs into Mob and Dimple.
Hmm.
And Mob explains that he's always known what my master is. My master is, was it like a good natured person,
a kind man or something like
something
that?
Yeah.
My master is a good dude.
Yeah,
basically,
that's all I need to know about you.
And it's like, yeah, that's pretty like Reagan. Like in the press conference, he has a little flashback where he's like, oh fuck, I was just telling him awful things, and I might have been pushing him forward, but I was also holding him back in a way, that kind of thing. And it's a really nice for the the student to become the master and kind of like it's like. You're a good guy, just don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
And presumably this will make a nice contrast when we meet the leader of Scar or Claw. I can't remember which one is it. Was Scar the division or Claw the I can't remember which one's the organization.
I imagine Claw is the overall team because Scar
makes
was the
Scar?
Division because all those guys are
yes.
Scars in various places. I think that's a running theme. It's probably another like another division's got, like, I don't know, heterochromia, with a heterochromia gang. That's our, yes. That's our gimmick right here.
Yeah,
Claw. Something like that.
Claw, Claw, Claw.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I assume, presumably whoever's in charge of that is, like, the bad version of Reagan, but also has psychic powers.
So he'll be legitimate, but an asshole about it.
Yeah, but simply he'll be taking advantage of other people.
Yeah, okay.
One would assume.
Mm. Yeah. But not like, what would it be? He wouldn't be like, Reagan has no power, but he's good at kind of persuading people, you know, with his charms and with his kind of ability to kind of appeal to people's best natures to get him to do what he wants, whereas the other guy would have power and just use that to dominate and make them do what he wants them to do.
Right.
With no empathy, with no kind of charade or facade of trying to be your friend or your anything like that.
Yeah, this would all be excellent setup for that as a contrast.
Mm.
Next up, we've got Rinchi Koda-chan, episode, what are we on now?
Seven.
We've got Shin Misawa as the director and Mika Doi as the actor. And this all takes place within a dream, pretty much.
Like, I was wondering, were the bits that she was waking up in, was that like a waking dream thing? Because she did have the string on her finger in those bits.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we learn, watching the interview, that it involved a massive amount of yarn making this episode.
Yeah. It's all photorealistic, like, threads put into the shot.
Mm.
Yeah. And also, this has got the most cuts of any of the episodes they reveal as well in the interview.
Which is really trying to outdo the last guy, I think. Where the most. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. The interview is, Mika Doi is great. Yeah, Mika Doi is great. She's full of life.
Oh, she's a great personality, but your man seems super fucking nervous. He said this was like his first directing job, was it?
No, he's done other stuff.
Yeah.
I thought he said this was like his first credit or something at the start.
No, they were talking about how he first worked at Mika Doi, and yes. There was on like Sasuga Sarutobi, and that was his first directing credit.
Yes.
Sorry. I completely misunderstood that. I thought he was a director of something else besides animation. I was like, wait, what? I was confused by that.
The only thing of his that I've seen was Shura no Toki, like, which I've shown my fight scene panel before.
Initial D.
Initial D. I only know of Initial D. I never actually sat down and watched a single second of that. Is there anything else? Well, he's worked on plenty of things that I have seen, but as in terms of directing, not as much, I don't think.
Okay.
But yeah, he comes to life when they go up onto the topic of mixed media.
Animation. Yeah, that's clearly what his interest was in this, anyway. I did like the use of the yarn as a thing, and he's even talking about using effects that, like, he's talking about making effects that he hasn't actually made yet by the time, because they're just done recording there or something, yeah. Isn't it?
Yes. Mm.
He's like, oh, I'm going to make the things ripple like water. And they're like, what? How are you going to do that? It's like, I don't know.
They had a good work around, you know, they just like animate the waves in it. But it was still like a good sort of like morass of various like tangled threads in this whole sea of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he talks about how he gets physical things and then captures them digitally and then manipulates them. Mm. And then he talks about like how it's like, oh, he goes to the fabric shop.
He wanted to put like literal string in like the frames and everything, but it's all fucking digital now, so you can't do that.
And he talks about like, oh, I want to get cloth which looks perfect for cotton, which looks perfect for clouds, but then when I put it in the scanner, it gets squashed and it doesn't look like a cloud anymore. Yeah.
I think he said something about like getting like actual swatches of silk to animate like a dress or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's basically been told off as like, no, that's fucking too much. Don't fucking do that.
Like, if he had his way, he would have done his segment all like stop motion to be like reconveyed that kind of like that tangible sense of the fabrics and such. But obviously, even for a short, that's a lot of work to be doing.
I think it worked pretty well for what it has, like the bits with Okoda-chan like climbing on top of the giant yarn ball in the sky and it like collapsing under her hands and that kind of thing. It's pretty well animated still, even if it's not traditionally animated. Yeah.
And he apologizes to the creator of the comic in that this barely resembles the comic in the slightest.
Well, that's why they got different people to put a different spin on it.
Exactly, yeah. Looking forward to next week, so I've not watched it yet. I've been a good boy. Then we've got, hang on, Brian watched something else this week.
What?
I watched Black Clover, episode 71, The Uncrowned Undefeated Lioness. So, 70 episodes since I last watched Black Clover. I hopped back in because, this is the episode which properly introduces Mario Leona, one of the two best characters from the series. Actually, well, there's now three best characters after this week's chapter. I mean, I did like Charmy anyway, but the latest chapter, the reveal is amazing. And it's like, you go, oh, that's why her character design was like that. But yeah, this is Mario Leona, who is the person who should have been the captain of whatever division she's now currently captain of. But
is it the Crimson Lions?
That's
is
it. That the one?
You got sidelined pretty early on.
Yeah, her brother's in a coma, so she's been called back into service to be the captain, and she's essentially if Go Nagai designed a female Luffy. And she was and she was now 32 years old. I think that's how. Unfortunately, I think lots of the edges, the Go Nagai type edges, which is in the character design in the comic, are kind of softened in the animation, which is quite a problem I have with the animation in Black Clover a lot of the time. But the performance is good and, I like this storyline. It's basically she drags a bunch of the characters off to train at some hot springs, and they're like, oh, that doesn't sound, and various characters are like, oh, hot springs, that's great, I can get this character to wash my back, this character to wash my back, this character to wash my back. All the people fantasizing about getting up to no good at hot springs are women, because that punchline next week will be that our two heroes are the best boys ever to attend a hot springs in a shonen comic.
No episodes of peeking. They're just going to go in, have a nice bath.
They're just too stupid
themselves.
And pure to have ever yes. Seditious thought in their brains at any time.
Yes. because other characters want to do them, and they're absolutely appalled at the behaviour of other characters wanting to be. But that's next week's episode. And there's other things which I forget about the writing of, like, you know, saying, you're forced, this is out of character for me. Or the little fairy telling, not to drag him off because it'd be out of character for him. It's like, I forget, it occasionally breaks the fourth wall about, people's characters. Also, you've got Yami boasting about how well his unit's done in the awards this year, and getting on everyone's nerves until one of the other captains, the one who can animate paintings, goes along with being impressed, and then Yami is suddenly like, "Well, he feels like it's not when it's not annoying people, he's not as having as much fun about boasting."
Yeah, I've always just met that vibe from when I've been in the comic. He's just so very earnest and I want to be Yami's friend, but fucking Yami hates that phone and says, "Fuck off! You're not getting the joke. What's funny?"
Yeah, because I say he's like I think he's supposed to be like younger than Asta, and you know he's like super prodigy.
He's older than Asta, and you know he's still like youngest captain. He's only like 19 or something. So he isn't that far ahead of them really.
They drags them off to the hot springs, which turn out to be basically a volcano. The hot springs are at the top of a volcano. You've got to go up this volcano, an active volcano, continually spewing lava. And essentially it's to teach them how to maintain their mana skins better, which is why she's dragged Charlotte and Yami along as well. Just like, this is the illustration of like how to control your mana skin. So everyone's like copying, imagining to do, and Nasta's like there going, "I'm just gonna have to walk it because I can't produce time, you know, no magic." And she basically makes a speech to him saying, "You've got a lot of luck," and she basically acknowledges his luck and his skill, but is like saying, "Even if you turn away now, you probably should turn away because you're not going to do this because you can't do magic. You've still got a pretty good chance of becoming the Wizard King based on everything you've done so far. But that's still not going to be enough for him. He's going to plow on because he's the hero in this story." And she also gets some encouraging speeches with Noelle, and we get like a flashback to like her relation with Noelle's mother. And I skipped so many of the early chapters that I hadn't picked up on the fact that it's like, oh, the tension is like her birth is what killed the mother. And so that's why, like...
Oh, I see.
That's why the rest of her family are a little standoffish to her. Yeah, it was reasonable fun. I'm not sure I'm going to step back in every week. I should probably jump back in again when the next favourite character shows up, which will be a while off. He's in the credits, so. But no, the latest chapter with Charmy is amazing. So good, and raises so many questions. I can't believe people actually think this arc is the end of this comic. It's like, come off it. It's not Naruto. I'm pretty sure he's got other ideas beyond. There's two countries we've not even been to yet.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it.
Yeah.
I think I've gotten out of the doldrums of like a lot of these are pretty kind of raw Shonen comic storylines, but now it's kind of getting into the meat of it when there's the evil faction appears and there's like a lot more kind of mysteries and questions being that need to be answered around that. So now I'm engaged. We're trying to like get down to that stuff now. So all aboard. And also again, still there for all these wizards high and mighty. I got an ultimate spell. I can make like lions out of bronze. Smash! You've broken your arm with a giant sword. Like not cut through you, not like slashed you in the face. And I just fucking broke your every bone in your chest by whamming this huge sword into you. nuance to it at all. Like chapter I just read there a little while back, I was fighting a guy who's got like warp power magic. So he's just like making warp tunnels and shooting fireballs into warp tunnels. So it's just
Oh, I get it. Throws his anti-magic swords away, jumps through the warp tunnel and punches the guy in the face. Like, oh, yes. Obviously, a guy who can't imagine would obviously think of that, because a guy who uses magic all the time would just try and, like, do some kind of counter spell. No one would think of that besides this dude. And it was one of those moments where, shouldn't you just do that? Like, reading the comic, shouldn't you just do that? It'd be easier. And then they do it. And it's like, yes, finally. Good. Some good sense as well.
There's some good stuff. Like, there's the payoff of, like, they basically have to eventually go, look, Aster, you've got to calm down a bit, because you're going to be destroying your body with all the physical nonsense you keep on getting into. And there's things like, oh, a character tries to sacrifice themselves, and people basically go, no, stop it. Stop trying to sacrifice yourself. Don't do that. And also, I hadn't caught on, but I saw somebody, because there's like Mary Leona and the next big character who shows up are both people who feel like, oh, they would have been leads in this comic. If they'd shown up, if the comic had started earlier, Aster wouldn't be the lead. One of them two would be. And then I saw somebody else point out, oh, that's the same for Yami as well. Cause essentially he's like the one Japanese character in this country, this fantasy world of, sort of pseudo Renaissance, Europe. It's like, yeah. Oh, essentially he's like an isekai character.
Also as well, similar to Aster, he stands out because he uses like a deadly weapon, you know, as opposed to just like spells and stuff like entirely.
Yes.
Like, he's still using magic, but so it's just to augment his natural sword fighting ability rather than like just throwing a fireball all the time instead.
Yeah, and he can use ki.
Yeah.
Mysterious power from whatever country he came from.
Yeah, the blood of the East flows through him.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like, the clover, I assume, is supposed to be France, based on most of the nobles' names. Though I notice, like, the really high-up nobles have got, sort of Roman names, so maybe Holy Roman. And then, like, the Diamond Kingdom seems to be Germany. So I'm guessing the other two are probably Spain and, Britain, or maybe Norway. We shall see. Next up is Karakuri Circus, episode 18, A Smile. This is great because it only adapted 6 chapters for a change.
We don't cut to the present as well. It's just entirely flashback.
Yes. That is the other thing. And also it makes things clearer. As to...
Yeah, definitely about characters' intentions and...
Yeah, and why characters are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
Though, there's one thing... So essentially, they give birth to Eleonore, and there's like this weird sort of tension between Guy and Francine... The doll Francine.
Well, and Guy and the mother, who's kind of like, you know, I'm going to fucking rob her and put like the fucking soapstone in her and shit. And she's like, sure, sure. Would you just mind her there? I'm going out to the fucking well. And he's like, the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, he put her too close to the fire and he's like, he's really babying the baby.
Yeah. And the parents like sneakily looking back in through the doorway at him.
Like, we knew he'd love her.
Yes. And also the bit where Francine and him are arguing about who loves Eleonore the best.
Yeah, they're initially standing on a hill and he's got his fucking puppet ready to go and he's like, okay, now we fight for all the fucking bananas. And because whoever wins is going to get Eleonora because she's the best. Oh my God, she's so cute. She's the cutest, isn't she? And then they sort of bond over it's like, actually, she's brilliant. That baby's great. And it's weird to see an emotionless puppet and a weird fucking teenage boy get like, oh my God, that baby's so cute. It works somehow, but
to be fair, they animate the baby pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
But then you kind of, I was also like, well, the baby hasn't got silver hair, so I guess you can't inherit being a shirigane, which then makes you go, okay, how did she end up being a shirigane? Well, we find out by the end of the episode. Cause is it as they're walking back, they go past some villagers, and they're like, oh, we're off, cause Shoji's like invited us all to a big old slap up dinner
at the village down the road.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're like, "Fuck it, he didn't tell us about it." And they go to him. It's like, "Hey, you're fucking paying for dinner for everyone." He's like, "I'm fucking not." It's like, what's that clockwork noise? Ah, bollocks, it's a bunch of puppets.
Yes. And there's a bunch of puppets outside, and so Francine's like, don't worry, I've got this. And she goes outside, and they're basically, who the fuck are you?
She's outside, yeah, I'm the queen of the puppets. And it's like, I don't fucking know you, and just stabs her with a giant spike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the bit, because it was like the combination, this is where the stuff we discussed the other week, of knowing that Sadayoshi's, or Dean Maestra's, like a master of disguise. I was like, oh, is he the one who told all the people to leave the village? And the reason why these automatons don't recognize Francine is because these are ones made by him rather than by Francine.
Yeah, I figured this is like it's similar to what they said before when they were fighting the Midnight Circus. Is like the puppets made by puppets have less of loyalty to Francine.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So they all don't need to get on one knee kind of thing.
Yeah, it could be that as well. Because I wasn't sure whether these are ones made by Sadayoshi up to no
good.
Yeah,
they're either made by a separate party or puppets made by puppets made by puppets.
Yes.
So
basically, Francine takes the baby, legs it, while everyone else gets ready to kick some puppets' ass.
Yeah, I mean, like, they ask her to, because it's like, well, you're crap at fighting, because we fixed you so you wouldn't be, so... we'll hold him off and you get her out of her. And she's like, what, you're going to trust me with the baby? And yeah, and Guy rightly points out, is like, what if this is like a fucking trick? And they're like, fuck it, I trust her. I trust this puppet with my baby.
Yeah, but she falls in a well,
Did she fall in the well or does she jump in the well?
She jumps in the well.
Because, I mean, like, she's lost a leg at that point.
Yes.
So she's kind of hobbling along.
Yeah, she kind of loses the leg almost straight away as soon as she's run out off. But it turns out this is a well of aqua vita, and so she starts dissolving in the well.
No, the baby, she realizes that the baby had the soapstone in it. Like,
yes. Oh, that turns.
When the mother got pregnant,
yes.
The soapstone transferred to the baby.
That's what turns the well into aqua vita. Yes.
So
right.
She's like, oh shit, I better hold this baby out of the fucking water. Cause initially, cause it's too cold, but also because it's like, oh fuck, it's turning into an aqua vita well. That's not good.
Yes, because the payoff.
Because I'm just going to dissolve as well. That's really bad.
When Guy finds the baby now has silver hair. The well was smashed, but Francine's nowhere to be seen. So now we know why Eleonore's humorless in her initial appearances is because she's absorbed some of the personality of the doll Francine.
So which is like the one time she manages to smile was actually in the well. So I guess that gave Eleanor the ability to smile eventually.
Eventually, yes. So that means that guy, that weird guy who didn't want to turn up to the fight, who gave Narumi that information, was not lying. He just was not having, didn't have 100% of the information.
Yeah, he was working off what he knew, sure. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, in between all this, there's some puppet massacring going on. Between Guy and Shoji and Angelina. Angelina's kind of already, like, hinted, basically raised a bunch of death flags early in the episode of, like...
Yeah.
She's basically passed on her life energy to the baby. So she knew...
Well, then she, like, literally just gave birth. She's kind of weakened from the whole ordeal, yeah.
Also, Shoji doesn't fight with a puppet. Shoji has... something which seems more effective weapon.
He's got two fucking katanas that he has hooked up to his own veins, so his blood pours onto the fucking swords, rad as heck, but that makes them poisonous to puppets. That's fucking cool. That was sweet. I was just like, I mean, like, obviously you don't want to fight like that for too long because you're literally bleeding out all the time. But I'm like, that was pretty rad.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it ends with Angelina's shattered into the crystal that the Shirigami turn into as they die. And
Guy finally calling her mama, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And Guy's in the well with the baby. Yeah, it was a good episode. As you can tell, it was better paced because we didn't actually have that much to explain to you. Niles, what happened in it?
No, the specifics of it are like, it was, that's the fucked up thing about this fucking show now. That was an enjoyable fucking watch. Why couldn't the rest of the show have been like that?
It's been good. I don't think there's been any problems ever since it moved on to this plot line.
I know, I'm just still annoyed of having gone through what I have.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't shake that for me.
It's still like a little confusing, you know. I have to take kind of just a bit, but still a little kind of baffling sometimes. There is some Kingdom Hearts bullshit going on here, where there's one person, there's actually five people. Or...
Yeah, it's got a bunch of that.
Yeah, I believe that's going to be explained soon.
Well, it makes sense because like the personalities can be kind of like passed on from one to the next, like maybe like other traits such as besides personality, possibly physical appearance or similarity can be like absorbed as well.
That seems to be the suggestion, and also you have the thing of like what's her name again? My brain was going to call her Shirogane, but that's not her name.
Eleonore
looks like her mam. And her mam looks like
her aunt.
Leader of the puppets. The copy of the leader of the puppets at this fucking stage, because she was based on her aunt, who she resembles. Oh, fucking hell. God damn. Yeah, so it's not only familial relations, but like you said, the passing down of personality and physical characteristics.
It's a little bit like trying to, like... make reincarnation into this like kind of magical,
like a fucking science of it, but it's so fucking like it's not going to explain it to you fully.
Well,
yes,
in the comic it breaks out diagrams, surely.
why this guy looks like that guy, that kind of shit.
Yes, but I think it basically there's like whether it will do this in the anime, I suspect it won't. But there's like diagrams of explaining a how the Aqua Vitae transference works. Mm. And B, how the actual brain transference that Sadayoshi was doing, or was trying to do, possibly.
Yeah, he's like trying to do his own version of that, yeah.
I mean, I don't know for sure, because it's in the untranslated part, but it's definitely diagrams involving A, B, and people, like, cut through, like, shots of people's heads, of like, this is how much A has been filled into B, and,
oh god, it feels like some fan character fucking shit. Yeah.
It's like you've got a 3-liter jug and a 5-liter jug. How are you going to fill 4 liters? Yes.
4 liters of this guy. Oh dear. Yeah. It's all very confusing, and like you said, it's like you not only have the alchemical explanation, but you have the guy who's trying to do some pseudo scientific version of passing himself down and that kind of thing. So you have like fucking wheels within different kinds of wheels made out of different things.
Who indeed may be the same person.
Yeah, and also obviously people making copies of other people who are puppets is the other fucking thing.
Yeah, it'll turn out it was Toshio Furukawa was behind it all at the end. It just breaks into live action. Next up. Talking of confusing and personalities overriding other people's personalities, it's Boogie Pop. Right, first thing.
And others. Lots of others.
Yes. First of all, we've got to deal with the last part of Versus Imaginator, which was episode 9.
Versus Imaginator 6.
Yes. In which, essentially, it turns out that whatever everyone was doing, it wasn't going to work anyway.
Boogie Pop didn't even need to fucking show up for the most part. It was like, Boogie Pop's there, is like, I said I better get involved now because that person was literally outside the park and about to get involved. But it turns out everything fucking sorted itself out. That's fucking an easy day for me. I'll count that as a win.
In fact, don't count something for I better just like intervene here before this gets embarrassing when he's gone.
You all are embarrassing yourselves. Yeah, that's pretty... Like, that's constantly Boogie Pop. It's like, well, I didn't have to do fuck all. That's great. Like, it's the laziest fucking superhero I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, it's like from Tuxedo Mask. My work here is done. I didn't do anything. Away.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so essentially Boogie Pop at the end shows up simply because Suima was close to getting herself involved.
Yeah, she kind of leaves her friend when her friend is like, oh, I'm going to check out that fucking theme park that I just found out is important. And she's like, okay, see you later. Turns into Boogie Pop, gets there before her, sorts it out before she can get inside the closed off fence. Oh, dear. Yeah.
And they do call it Paisley Park.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
How do they get away with that before JoJo has to go with fucking Zipper Man? What's going on with that shit?
I know.
Maybe it's if you do like every fucking character is a copyright infringement, it becomes a problem.
No, I mean there's stuff in the next one. There's a character in The Dawn who's straight up named after a record. like no change to it at all.
It might be easier to do the legalese of like, we have one copyright infringing thing in ARK rather than every character in this scene is copyright infringing.
Well, I assume it's not coming from Crunchyroll, it's coming from
Warner's, definitely. It's company. Yeah.
Yeah, I assume whoever's doing Boogie Pop either hasn't thought about it or doesn't care.
Honestly, I'm kind of charmed by the JoJo's ones at this stage. It's funny to see what mad thing they'll come up with that they can trick me into thinking the characters are saying.
It is. It's provided like rounds on podcast quizzes for years now at this stage, because now it's like, oh, we can make a whole like a whole category about what the fuck did they change this to in the in the subs on the Crunchyroll stream.
Like, if it's a multiple choice question, some of the fucking other choices can be more applicable than what they did go with.
Anyways, yes. It's only tangentially related to Pop.
Yeah.
Basically, Jin Asukai was going to sacrifice Camille and use her to graft her heart to everybody else's.
And it's like, it's only going to take it in a small way, it's only going to hit just this city. But I mean, like, that'll be a good start for my evil plan of world conquest.
My evil plan of making everyone feel better about themselves.
but making them feel better in a way that they don't want to improve. It's like, I'm good. I'm just happy how it is.
But that's him, that's just his idea of like, one, the problem is solved. Yeah, from my opinion. This is the ideal way for everybody to be. As I see it, which obviously is, well, that's just your opinion, man. Maybe I don't see it that way.
I did like Boogie Pop pointing all that shit out to him. That was pretty great.
Yeah.
Dressing down about it. It's like, dude, that's a bad plan.
Yeah, I had the whole idea. Like, he went off on 10 all these flowers, but, you know, they're going to, like, keep growing. Like, you know, even if you fucking, like, move them to, like, different parties.
If you do the grafting on them, they'll still grow naturally. And
if you want to keep it
if you grow them all together, they'll grow apart because it's still alive, yeah.
Like, I've had to go to everybody in the city, like, no, like, keep doing your rounds, kind of cutting and trimming and pruning, and they'll still just grow differently anyway. Like, all of this, as you mean right now, is pointless. So, let's bring everybody back to the same sort of starting point, but they're all going to, like, blossom diverge and develop in their own ways. So, this is all stupid, and you're stupid for doing it.
Yeah, but in the sarcastic, dry way that Boogie Pop does that.
Yeah.
Also, your man, what's the guy's name? The little kung fu version of Boogie Pop.
Masaki.
Masaki, yeah.
Yeah, like he tries to do his own rescue thing, but, I thought the bit with him finding her apartment, I was like, ooh, geez, they're really going to play it that way, but, with him finding the photos, but at least he was, it didn't sway him in the fucking slightest. And their solution to how we're going to defeat all his fucking cool fighting moves is like, we'll attack him with park mascots.
Yeah, that was a great
bit.
They're
padded.
Because first of all, it's mascots, and then like a bunch of clowns come in as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just creepier. Yeah, yeah.
Like, we'll attack him psychologically. We know he's afraid of clowns.
What's that mascot on Twitter that keeps like doing stupid stunts?
Cheetan.
Yeah, like he gets piled on by a bunch of Cheetans and fucking circus clowns.
Get ready, Cheetan's got an anime coming next season.
Yeah! She got fired, but whatever, she'll come back and get her revenge. Success is the best revenge.
that was a really good bit, and they're going like, don't worry, we're just going to inject you full of these drugs and it'll be all, you won't even care anymore because your man's going to fix you with his plant powers and shit. And that's when Boogie Pop shows up, not soon enough to stop him getting drugged, obviously, because that would be being effective.
No. Just one less witness.
Yeah, pretty much. She probably did it on purpose.
Boogie Pop always reminds me of the Sandman in ECW, who is like, where the Sandman would play and he takes so long entering that whatever other baby faces he was supposed to be saving would continue to get beaten up.
Yeah, the very ineffective hero.
Which is a bit like Goku as well sometimes. And definitely like Saitama in One Punch Man. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a story.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And for Boogie Pop, like, most of the story seemed to resolve without any intervention.
I know, that's the great thing. And the fact that then the Dawn has not quite the same, but it's a similar attitude of, The Dawn makes a lot of the stuff in this story and the first story, particularly this story, though, more sense. As you kind
like,
of
here's my origin story. I'm barely involved in it.
Yes.
Also, what the hell?
We only vaguely hint at what the origin might be. It's actually Maggie's origin story, is
the and it's more to do with Boogie Pop. Why are you called Boogie Pop? Well, let me take you back a couple of years to a strange case I was only partially involved in.
Yes.
We'll get onto that in a sec. I did like basically like that seems to be the thing of it. The plot resolves itself. Boogie Pop shows up to give the villain a bollocking and possibly chop off their head and fucking leaves. Yeah.
And so you basically Imaginator like just gives up and dissipates.
Hits the ground. Yeah. Goes like, oh, I had a fair shot. Fuck it. I guess I'll see what happens next.
Yeah.
Whereas your man falls out the window. What was the deal with that wind? I couldn't, was that like something else or something that was?
Why is very high up, and this air current just changing.
It seemed very convenient, like the Boogie Pop was just like, I could kill you like this, but I'm not going to kill you because all of a sudden you're not an enemy to humanity because you lost. Like in One Piece.
Well, I think that he never was a
man.
They never were enemies to humanity.
Yeah, he was some saddle. Like, it's more like, oh, you're just fucking, you're more trouble than you're worth. Like, you know, it's probably best you've gotten been locked away somewhere. I'm not going to like, eliminate you, but it's probably better for society and the world as a whole if you just get the help you need so desperately.
When Boogie Pop turns on his potential victim as well and kind of like, She does the thing of saying is like, oh, actually you do have like a plant inside you, but you have something else protecting you. Also, I kill enemies of humanity. And are you one? Ah, no, you're not. I'm not going to kill you now. I might later though. Watch out. The kind of like, there's a menace there.
Well,
like,
yeah, is it a threat to the world rather than enemies of humanity?
I think you might be right. Yeah. Maybe that's how it's worded.
Yeah. Because I think that's the subtle difference between what Boogie Pop's after and what the Toa
organizers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they trying to stop evolution or?
Yes. So we're beginning to talk. Let's get into the Dawn. Because that gives you a clear idea of what the Toa organization are about. Is that they're trying to find people. They're trying to find evidence of people who are evolving and then eliminate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they are current humanity, and if we have a new kind of humanity, then we'll be the fucking old humanity and we'll get fucking wiped out.
Yeah. Someone points out that there was a type of humanity around before this type of humanity came about, and they didn't survive.
There were at least two different kinds of humanity around before, like Homo sapiens. Yes. So yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out good for the fucking, the guy who's not catching up as quick.
That being said, they are trying out all kind of different experiments and things. So if they're not completely disinterested in humanity evolving, it's just that if we're going to do it, we're all going to do it
we'll
all at the same time
way.
Together. And we're going to like say we're going to control the manner in which it happens. But these kind of outliers here are going to screw up our equilibrium and our grand plan, so we can't have them both complicating things. We have
they
to
basically want like a closed system of nature rather than just wild fucking random evolution, which is what evolution does. Yeah.
Completely cultivated, which kind of ties into a little bit well with fucking Jin Asakai, because he wanted to kind of have a cultivated kind of uplifting of humanity as well.
In his own way, like more so concerned with their development of their soul rather than their powers, I suppose. But yeah, like you said, what they were after was kind of aligning, I should say.
Yeah. And we should also say, as you said, it was a story being told by Boogie Pop to Echoes at the end of the world in another dimension.
I was like, okay, are they on a different planet? Are they in the future? Are they in another dimension? Is this where Boogie Pop goes when Boogie Pop goes to sleep?
I think that's the implication. Mm-hmm. And it might be for the future because they mentioned something about the possibility that the people in charge of the Toa organization are in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not fucking clear about that at all. It's like, what is this wasteland? And, you know, Echo is just wandering through everything crumbling. And it's like, oh, hey, Boogie Pop, I didn't see you there. That's a weird name. Where did you get that name? That's Buggy, the setup.
Buggy Pop does mention that they have, they don't have much control over how or indeed when they appear.
Yeah. Buggy Pop seems to know that it just appears to save the world, that kind of thing. From various threats. And anyone can be a threat, I think is the thing. Yeah.
But it's also not entirely clear. So the first part involves, this artificial human, codenamed Scarecrow, from Solar Organization, who's been sent to investigate a character who will not, does not appear in this arc, but appears in the next arc.
Of course. Of fucking course. I was like, what was going on with that? And I just thought to myself, yeah, this is going to be fucking cleared up later. And yeah, of course it fucking is. God damn it.
Who is apparently an ally of the Terror Organization, but they're like suspicious that he might be up to something untowards. So he's investigating this hospital that he designed. And during which he's observed by Nagi, and they strike up a friendship, and he kind of realizes, oh, I think she's one of these evolved people.
Well, I think he's pretty clear when she almost breaks his hand.
Yes.
When she's in hospital because she's getting these kind of weird seizures or fits that just hurt for some reason. He realizes it's because, oh, her body is changing because she's evolving at a very rapid pace.
So I'll go rogue, steal this drug from one of our locations, and if I give it to her, it will cancel her evolution.
Or at least like, stabilize it in some way. She's still pretty, physically capable like, afterwards.
Yes, but yeah, that doesn't get the same benefits that people who aren't evolved get when they take it. So, unfortunately, is also they've realized he's done this, so they send another agent, Mo Murder.
So this guy was like the self-investigating part of the Tor organization. Yeah. So, you investigate other parts, and if any other parts of the Tor organization fuck with us, Mo Murder goes in and murders them.
Yes.
And that's his job. He's the cleaner kind
Pigeon
of thing.
Pigeon sends messages between different parts of the organization. These are, but, yeah, they're kind of the most human faces we've had of, the artificial
They feel
humans.
Like people, alright. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's part of this, I think the part of the story is they're becoming more like people.
By interacting and being among them, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Because
initially they're just their job and just their title, but obviously they are gaining personalities, personhoods, personal wants and desires, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Personal grudges as well, because though like some of them are only like doing their duty as decreed to them by the Tor organization, they still like bear that grudge against the one who did it.
Yeah, like your Pigeon kind of going like, "Hey, you're a murderer, aren't you, Mo Murder? You murder, you're a murderer." Yeah. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm a synthetic human made for murdering. What's the problem? I don't get it."
So Scarecrow's dying, bleeding out. He's got a weird mechanical hat.
Was he part
like,
robot?
It like
know.
Electrocuted someone or something. Was it like a defensive hat? I don't fucking know what the deal was.
When a mysterious figure appears before him as he's dying and basically like asks him if he's going to come back as a superhero. And this is the point where I'm like, because when we get to the second episode, we've got Boogie Pop's host at the hospital, and her mother's, is it Toka? That's her name, isn't it?
Toka Miyashita is the host.
It's like saying, this man's taken over my daughter's personality. And I was like,
he's convinced it's multiple personalities and a man is there specifically.
So is there an element of Scarecrow in Boogie Pop?
I think it's more just Boogie Pop, even though it's this cosmic entity that just possesses whoever, it like identifies as male and just in their manner of speaking when they're in the Boogie Pop mode is more like how a man would talk in Japanese.
Yeah, no, I know all that.
No, I think what you're saying is like it was Boogie Pop, did it base it? Is it either basing itself off of Scarecrow, or has it imprinted on his personality and picked it up, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Because of the relationship.
Because I don't think it's straight up Scarecrow inside the girl, which makes it Boogie Pop. I don't think that's the case.
But it's like Boogie Pop's specific interest in Nagi.
Yeah.
I feel has come from Scarecrow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I
see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, not only parts of his personality or inflection or whatever has infected Boogie Pop, but things that he was interested in.
Yes, because at the end, Nagi's surprised that Boogie Pop knows her name.
Mm.
And there's, I don't think there's any other indication we've had in the story that Boogie Pop would have picked the name up from anywhere.
And I think at this stage of Nagi's life, like, she's been in and out of hospitals and stuff, so she's not the most famous girl in school. So
yeah,
it's not the same thing of like, hey, how do you not know who I am? I'm a big deal on campus, kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh well, I that kind of actually that makes sense then at the end when Boogie Pop is speaking to Nagi at the end of Soul Tobacco about asking like Nagi, is she going to keep on like doing what she's doing, fighting off people, carrying on her will? That makes sense then.
Yeah, like Boogie Pop's doing the same thing then.
Mm. Yeah.
In a different regard, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know whether that is what's the case, but I felt like that was what the story was trying to point you towards as being a possible origin for Boogie Pop.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's definitely trying to imply that and trying to make that a way of reading it. Yeah,
I kind of think that this probably will end up being like a Go-Go 13 type situation where it'll give you multiple options as to what the real explanation is. And never
and it's
give
probably
you...
the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Yes.
Anyway, so yeah, the second episode we fully meet this other Doctor we got a glimpse of in the first episode. Kasugi, is that her name?
Yes.
Who got hold of the rest of the chemical that Scarecrow had injected Nagi with, and she's taken it home to experiment with.
Experiment on rats who do not like her for obvious reasons.
Yes, because
she keeps like making them immortal and crushing them in her hand.
Yeah.
Not cool.
Meanwhile, there's a serial killer going round. Meanwhile, she's also drinking the blood from a patient who she's terrorizing.
It's like, oh, you better watch out. You better not go crazy because then you'll go into the shrink ward. I'm the fucking head of the shrink ward. Let me get some of that blood. And the guy is just there like mostly catatonic in the bed, just freaking out. And I was just like, fucking hell, that sucks, man.
Yeah. And her whole thing is that she says, oh, if I open a coward on my life, whenever I ran to a scary situation, I'd always run the other way. And that got me thinking, where is fear emanate from? Like, what causes this and what does it emanate from? And she takes to experimenting that because apparently the blood or essence of people who are terrified is much more satisfying and tasty to her. So she's takes a lot of time in like this kind of mentally torturing and also physically torturing her victims before
also,
she devours
men's
them.
Blood isn't that tasty. It's brave women's blood, especially young women, because they're stupid and will do dumb things or something like that. They're fearless, I think is the way she puts it, or something like
yes, that. Yes, and she wants to kind of get to a state like so she's always been on either side of it, being the coward who's been afraid of things.
Yeah.
Like, how would it be then if I'm the one inspiring fear? Like, no, if I get a kind of a level of strength or power, or I'm the dominant one, I'm the one inspiring the fear, like, how would that feel?
Yeah, if you're the cause of the fear, you can't be afraid. So, like, how does that work? That kind of thing. Mm.
So we learn that, she's the serial killer. Then we go and meet Nagi's dad in the third episode. Because he got a letter from somebody saying, I've got superpowers, but people are coming after me, so I feel like I'm going to be shortly going to die.
But thanks for the books. Fucking top-notch stuff, man.
And so he gets his researcher, I guess.
I think it's a guy like who he knows in the force or something. Like. Oh, I thought the guy was actually a policeman. But he was like, but that would make sense as well. He's a criminal.
To investigate, and everything matches up with.
Like, oh, yeah, the guy who sent you that letter, he's been dead for 2 days.
Yeah,
he was missing for like a week before that or something?
Yeah, they found him dead a day after he'd sent the letter. He'd been missing 3 days before the letter was sent.
That was it. Yeah, yeah. And it was like, oh, he seemed to have just fallen down some stairs. So I guess there's no reason to look into that. Nothing suspicious about going missing and then fucking dying at the bottom of the stairs. Happens to the best of us. Like,
And we learned that he apparently had this power which inspired the people around him.
Yeah, his classmates did better in tests, and he just kind of like helped them be a better them, essentially. Yes. What a monster. And even the writers there, so wait, if I talked to him, I'd be a better writer? Fucking sweet. That sucks.
Then her dad runs into a younger version of the girl who committed suicide and came back as Imaginator, or Imaginator took the form of.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of things taking the form or
possibly was already Imaginator at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, it felt that way because there was something very off about the atmosphere in that conversation.
I mean, like, she walks up to a stranger in the fucking park and is like, "Hey, mister, you're going to die." And he's like, "Yep." Not much we can do about it, though. Let's have a conversation about it. Oh, dear. That whole situation was really creepy.
Yeah. By the end of the episode, he's being killed by Mo Murder as well. Yeah. So, looking too deep.
Yeah, but he does convince Mo Murder. He's like, hey, don't kill my daughter, because then the police will make like a big thing of it. You know, you want to keep this on the quiet. So, yeah, like, it's one of the two times you see Mo Murder be kind of like not convinced to not kill, but to take something on board. The other time is when he's talking to that boy who wrote him the letter, and he talks about it like, hey, you got a bug in your belly.
Yes.
And I assume he got it from the writer, the dad, because his daughter uses a similar turn of phrase.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't say that explicitly, but I assume it's just implying it, and that's why it's like a seed to set him off. Like,
and then he's seeing the news about the serial killings, and it gets to his guts. It agitates the bug, and so he decides that he's going to have to go and investigate this murder. Because I mean, he's a killer, but hey, he's not a. Because what they're doing is they're like, she's pulling the jaw off and pulling the brain out the skull.
Oh yeah.
She's dislocating the jaw and sucking the brains out. That's the common thing. Other than that, there's nothing, and all young women, but there's no other commonalities between where they're attacked and that kind of thing.
It's fucking grisly as well. Like, you might see like, fall from like a distance, but it is messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously with himself and, what's her name?
Nagi.
With more murder.
Nagi.
When Nagi, investigating it, it's like, okay, so this place is right out in the fucking open. Like, it's a really bad place to murder someone. I was like, here under the bridge, it's like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like, cause that'd be a good place to murder.
But it's almost like they want to get caught.
Yeah.
Or that they don't care whether they get caught or not. Cause obviously fear is the driving force behind the murders.
I do like the characterizations of Nagi and Masanori Mo Murder, because this should be like a super tense thing of like having, she's unknowingly teaming up with the man who murdered her father, but the way they play both the characters, it's perfectly understandable.
and then the way if she's walking up to him is like, hey, you fucking case in the joint, coming back to the scene of the crime, huh? Ah, gotcha. And it's like, no, I'm just fucking curious. I'm like, why are you curious? Well, I feel like I could get into the mind of a murderer, so I said I'd have a look at it. And she's like, that's not weird at all. Let's talk about this like rational adults.
But they're probably made of all. When my father's books, and I've been here. Yeah. I've grown up hearing him talk about like the criminal like psychology all my life. So this kind of talk doesn't faze me in the slightest.
But she does mention later on, like basically, she was while also teaming up with this guy to find out more about the murders. She was also keeping an eye on him to make sure he wasn't the murderer. She was investigating him while teaming up with him, which is pretty impressive. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess that's a classic detective novel.
It is, but I thought it was pretty well handled in this. Like, she's just like, sorry, I was actually keeping tabs on you as well. You know how it is. You could have been the murderer. You looked creepy.
And she's perceptive enough to, like, she realizes, oh, if this guy has killed anyone, it's not been on his own volition. Anyone he's killed, he's been ordered to.
She's correctly identified that he hasn't killed anyone for the crack. But that doesn't mean that she has figured out that he does kill on orders.
But at the same time, he's undue for what his job is. He's taken a special interest, and in the same way that Scarecrow was affected by her.
Don't get personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
becoming kind of more human rather than being just their job title. They have interests outside of that. Yeah.
So he tries to stop, Kasugi from tranquilizing, because he seems to have like a flash forward.
I think it's just like,
or his intuition, his murderer's intuition.
This is what I would do. That kind
if
of,
she gets pranked, then I go and bring him in, and then, I'm aware, probably by talking to she's some kind of evolved human and that, and it's probably something to do with that, to go out this plan, bring him in and dissect her. I kind of am soft on the kid. I don't want that to happen to her, so I'm going to intervene.
Yes.
And I'm going to get stabbed in the back from my cuckolds.
Yes, because it was a trap.
I think the flash forward was basically what he was doing at all the other crime scenes. It was like, how would I have murdered that girl? That kind of thing. Where he's like, okay, I'm setting up the scene. It's like, obviously you'd snipe from up that position, that kind of thing. But he didn't expect that, our monster doctor would team up with Pigeon.
Yes. So she's, that's the worst. That's for someone who's sucking people's brains out. That feels like the worst thing she does is basically say, well, Pigeon, do you want to be dead with the man you loved?
It's not a good sell. It's like, yeah, but you'll get the guy who killed him. It's like, ooh, that is tempting, though.
Yeah. And the doctor's plan worked as well, because trying to commit these murders now, because he's aware this probably is, wherever this drug came from, was some kind of higher, like, organization that's well-funded, behind it all. So I'm going to do this and do these crimes in this manner, and that'll probably draw them out to me. And they'll also is what I'm trying to draw people to know, who would only, people who are very daring, probably fearless, who want to investigate this, and then I can make them my victims, and I can bring in people of this organization, both to kind of get probably more of the stroke if I can help it, but also I can probably use to my own ends, which
pin all the crimes on the person coming after you, because they'll be dead, because part of your plan is killing them, so, and then you won't be investigated for any crimes.
Yeah, I do like that she refers to the terror organization as the system.
The man, society.
Well, yeah, because that ties in with the stuff from the preview, from Imaginator, where Boogie Pops explained to Masaki that just because you can resist the brainwashing that weird super beings are doing, doesn't mean you're resisting the brainwashing that society is doing to you.
Yeah, as in, like, what is free will? Like, anyone actually make a choice outside of fucking society? It's like, no, it's all in the context of other people, so that's a kind of brainwashing in its own way.
Yes, I wonder if they're going to play the terrorization as, like, something which would, like, a natural defense system that humanity would create societally.
It's just like naturally, it's not like someone going like, I am the head of the Tor organization. I've got it to get rid of all the mutants and everything. It's like, no, this is a...
Something which would just happen.
Like antibodies.
Because
or
of society. Yeah? So it is a real thing, but it also might just be something which would naturally occur.
Yeah, like a society develops these antibodies and antipathogens to protect itself from change, I guess, in this case.
Like, I thought it's like society is relatively kind of docile and just goes with the flow of things. That would keep any kind of disruption or violence or disturbances to a minimum. But, if the world as a whole knew that when people are revolving and getting superpowers, that would fucking throw everything into anarchy. It won't be like when My Hero Academia, where it's all fucking, it's all peaches and gravy. It's going to be fucking anarchy, absolute fucking chaos. Yeah,
until the next thing takes over, and whatever was the prior thing is going to be fucking dead in the wake of it.
Kasugi does take into account that Nagi's like leading her into a trap, but
I feel like she's very like, I'm coming to get you, Barbara, kind of fucking shit. It's just like, dude, she's clearly leading you to a trap.
Well, she's aware of that.
Get your shit together,
because she's like, oh, she's just leading me away so that other people don't get hurt.
Yeah, but she's like, oh, obviously she's leading me away from the hospital because there's a lot of innocent victims. She's taken off the road so that I can't catch anyone on the road to threaten. It's like very clever. And it's like, yeah, but she's also clearly leading you to a trap, dude. Yes. Fucking pay attention.
But she's so obsessed with like, I'm going to make her feel fear.
Yeah. She's drunk on her own power and overconfident as a result.
Mm. Yeah, because
I'm not saying it's not realistic. I'm just saying it's like, you fucking idiot. I'm there as an audience going like, you're fucked, dude. You're super fucked.
But no,
everyone shouting in the cinema, don't go in there.
To the monster, though.
Yeah, it is good when she's like, ah, oh, you're showing fear. You're afraid. And then she's like, no, I'm not afraid. I'm just worried. I'm worried that this isn't going to work.
Worried that my awesome plan isn't going to work, which it totally will.
Yes. I've dragged you to the water, and then I've got my giant electric stick.
What, you think I was wearing this prototype version of my costume for the crack? No, it's insulated, motherfucker.
Perfect for a superhero.
With dirty water. Yeah.
Also appears to shoot flames at the other end.
I thought that was the battery just freaking out.
I thought it was exploding.
Yeah.
But no, fun. I totally planned that, you guys. It was super cool.
And then puts her in an armbar.
Oh, that was fucking sweet. Just yanks that thing right off.
Yeah.
And again, Boogie Pop does show up after this point and the monster runs off. It's like, oh, brilliant. Fucking half my job done for me. Easy fucking day.
Well, yeah.
Literally. Yeah. Our body is falling apart because the electric shock seems to have disrupted her highly evolved, rapidly evolved body. Yes. And now it's just losing bits of herself.
And then Boogie Pop's basically like, well, we'll just let the terror organization clean all this mess up.
Not my job. Not
exactly. I think, because once you've had the explanation of what the terror organization are after, it's like, it's not quite the same as what Boogie Pop's after, but
it aligns often enough that who fucking cares? Well, Boogie Pop doesn't care, basically.
No, yes.
As soon as that comes into conflict, Boogie Pop's probably going to fucking drop on him, all right. But eventually, at the end of it, when someone else has already done most of the work, but up until that point, Boogie Pop is happy enough to let them do fucking the heavy lifting.
Yeah, because it's not like they invented Manticore to do what Manticore was doing. They invented Manticore and then Manticore escaped and started doing what Manticore was doing. So they, it's fascinating, and I'm sure we'll get a lot more in the next arc.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like when, in the Imaginator arc where I think it's just some grand plan at organization to fund. No, they're just kind of sort of fucking around, just like putting drugs in the water supply to see what happens. It, like, you know, having this dude go out and like, have kids sell drugs and fucking put them in Big Macs and see what would happen.
Which also resembles urban legends and conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Chemtrails.
Yeah, like secret underground society, they're putting chemicals in the water, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, it was the late 90s.
I mean, like, you think people don't think that anymore?
I know, but no, but that particular thing is like...
Yeah, yeah, that urban legend, sure.
It was the left wing thinking that rather than the right wing.
Did that start with the, crap, what's the stuff that's in toothpaste that's in water? Everyone freaking out about
fluoride.
Fluoride.
I will say these four episodes, maybe the best looking four episodes.
The top and tail, definitely. The two in the middle are still decent, but that first one in particular looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good.
I think it's a standard Boogie Pop problem of there's a lot of scenes of people just standing around talking.
They're very engaging and cool in their own way.
They're not visually exciting. They're like, I'm invested in this interesting story you're weaving. That kind of way.
Yeah. I particularly liked the meeting in the doctor's office when Toka Miyashita is brought in talk to Dr. Van. It's okay. It's like, no. So that's sort of personality. Just try talking like with male like verbs and pronouns and then see where it goes. And said, okay. Dude, I think there's another person inside me who wants to do stuff like save humanity or get rid of humanity's like enemies. It's kind of like how it is like very gradually sort of morphed from one personality to the other. That was a really cool scene and a cool bit of acting as well.
Yeah.
Aoi Yuki's part.
We should mention Suima's briefly in this as like potentially being one of the Doctor's targets.
Yeah, she's kind of like looking at this one. It's like, ooh, this lady's confident. Hmm.
Oh, I saw like she had like a lot of photos there. They were going to like frame the Mo murder for the Doctor's crimes, and then they just kind of let a few Polaroids there. I suppose she was in one of them. Yeah.
Mm. It's always handy to check out the boogiepop-anime.com/character pages. it will both give you a list of any new characters and any variations of characters you've already seen. So that's how I knew to look out for her because I'd already seen the character design. Yeah, it's Kiyoichiro Taratsuki is the guy who Scarecrow is investigating at the start to this. And he's the very first character on the list of characters for the next arc.
Oh, God damn it! They still can't fucking. They gotta do stories in order for once.
Well, this isn't in order. This is they've skipped to do this one.
Oh, okay.
Because this is the sixth novel, and we're going to go back to the fourth novel, I think, next.
Yeah. It just feels like a supplementary thing that would normally be like an OVA special, for instance. But I kind of like that I just dropped it here in the middle of this, and it gives you a lot more context and information about things that are happening in the, let's say, the main Boogie Popinator series.
Like, I'm wondering, like, because of their constantly telling shit out of order and it changing the context of what you know before, they even cut in this one the thing with Echo is, like, remembering that girl who died that we've never actually seen except in a flashback.
You saw
and
her
said there was way more of her in one of the books, so I was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. We saw her in this one, and I was like, are we going to get, like, an episode about her, like, fucking way down the line?
Possibly. She was just there visiting Nagi in hospital, but wasn't much more beyond that.
Like I said, we haven't really seen much more of her besides in flashback, that kind of way.
Yeah. Apparently this Kyuichiro Tarutsuki is also in another series of novels by the same author. I think about, I can't remember what it's called now. It's about a pair of cops and like one's a robot, though apparently the fact that they're a robot is of no relevance to the story.
Oh dear.
That's Boogie Pop and Others. There was a lot of it. It was all good. Bono, episode 47 of the third season. Ah, it's winter, and ah, it's that pig again.
As soon as I was looking at him, I was like, this isn't a different pig. This is the same fucking pig, isn't it?
Yes.
And it proved me right at the end, so I felt good about that. Dear. I don't know, maybe it is a completely different pig, and just when he walks off into the horizon, a different pig comes back for the new season.
I can't remember, what was he too into last time he showed up?
Summer. Summer pig.
Yes, it's the seasonal pig.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a double. I remembered him, but I couldn't remember what he... Yeah, that makes sense.
Such winter for 26 years of my life. I'm all about it.
I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the autumn.
Yes.
Maybe he hates the autumn. Loves the other seasons. Autumn. No, fuck off.
For 26 years, I've always hated autumn.
They start with them discussing what they do when they think, ah, it's winter.
I did like Bono, like, you know, it's like, I'm philosophizing about life and what the seasons really mean to me, as his dad plays with a crab in the background. That was
pretty
cool.
Crab plays at him.
Yep. The tables is timed. That was pretty great. And Chipmunk has misery, obviously.
Yeah, Gavin Walnut's sister eats them all.
Yep, just being bullied. That's his life. Raccoon, it doesn't fucking matter to him. Yes. He doesn't fucking care.
He raises his hand and walks from right to left.
He's like, I'll raise my hand when I start thinking, it's winter. And it's just like, very slow walk. Is like, oh, he's thinking about it now. It's like, okay, doesn't really tell me anything.
And they see a sign for a winter seller.
He's selling you all the equipment you'll need to enjoy this beautiful winter that's apparently very short.
Get your winter glow sticks. $5 a piece.
Yes. Oh, so this guy's 28 years old as well, I guess. As he's, Winter and I have loved each other for the past 28 years.
Oh, 28 years, okay.
Yeah.
Pigs live that long? Don't think about too much.
No. they go ice skating.
Like, they're into the ice skating when they see it, because he looks fucking class, but they hate him as soon as they try and get on it without skates. He shows them some snow from the top of a mountain, but it's already melted. fuck's sake. He talks about how bracing it is to fall through the ice as you're ice skating on it. God. Yeah, he's kind of a clusterfuck, basically.
And,
his season is kind of, embraced the season, you know, going, oh, it's got its drawbacks, where it's like, oh, it's cold out, I want to be cold out. And then, yeah, but it could be like nice, brisk, bracing weather, it's lovely. If you're trying to say, like, the seasons may change, it may have your favorites, but it's not to say that one is better than the other. You know, they all have their pros and cons. And I think she's just embracing for what they are and just enjoy yourself. I'm that way about the weather. Everyone's saying, oh, it's raining out. And people always say, when it's raining, it's miserable out. And I'm saying, Why do God put a negative spin on a natural, like, process that is essential to nature? It's just rain. One, that means, great, stay inside and, like, have, like, a hot cup of tea, play some video games. It's good. Like, try and accentuate the positives of it. That's what I'd say.
So you're the rainy weather pig. Then.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, the kind of this, and it would have picked like going outside and just going to the park and
sitting. Oh, no, that's a different Niall. He was wearing a different leaf on his head.
You're so topless, though. Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
And of course, the punchline is he wanders off into the distance.
I'll see you next winter.
And then comes back as the spring seller, explaining that him and Spring have been in love for 28 years. Yeah, I wish. This is something for something like Bono Bono, I wish on Crunchyroll they like had tags for the characters appearing in each episode.
So you'd have a name for them, or?
Yeah, but also you could easily go back and find their last appearance.
Oh, yeah, sure. Man, are we going to have to fucking make the Bono Bono wiki? Because I don't see anyone else fucking doing that.
We take on this duty with honor. We knew the risks, we put on the uniform.
I put on the uniform one leaf at a time, like everyone else. Dear.
Finally, it is... No, there might be something else. Pre-finally. Mm-hmm. Niall, have you watched any Star Twinkle Pretty Cure?
I am up to date. Let's go over it briefly. Still pretty good, still pretty fun, getting the team together. Had Lala, the alien girl, who has to be hidden out in the back garden or around the house, away from Hikaru, the main character, is away from her, rest from family and the rest of society, because we can't be discovered. It's a breach of intergalactic law, so don't want to be doing that. And Lada's kind of down, because it's like, oh, I want to be a Precure too, but the data says it's like I got like a 0.00000, like 12% chance of ever becoming one. Oh, shucks. Oh, your curiosity, what was Hikaru's like odds of being one herself? It's the same percent, like it was 0.00012%. It's like, huh, but she can do it, maybe I can do. And Kara was like, yeah, maybe, because Dada might be able to see what can happen in the past, but doesn't know what's happening in the future. So you can be a pre-cure if you want to. And she does. And she becomes Cure Milky, and she's got electrical powers to shock guys with. And then the main thing is that, so the Star Princess planet has been taken over by the bad guys, and they've been scattered across the universe. And it's the pre-cure job to try and find his princess and put him back on the throne and get his bad guys out of here. So they're all like the 12 like signs of the zodiac. So they find like the Taurus one first, and there's gonna be 4 pre-cures, and there's like a little like the gimmick is there's the pendant, and then you put the pen into it, and then you kind of start drawing constellations and drawing their costume and so. So I presume they're gonna get like 3 pens each, and might give them like a new costume or a special ability. That's a gimmick. So when I was taking those out, they also meet up with the stars of the school, the superstars. There's 2 of them. There's the sun and the moon. Whew, I wonder what their like costume is going to be like when you get them. There's one we see briefly who's going to be in the opening episode is Kaguya, who's like the moon. She's at the very kind of prim and proper one. has the power of perception where she can figure out that girl is always like following along Hikaru. Don't she have pointier ears than normal? Is she some kind of alien? Also, is that like Teddy like flying around the air and squeaking at people? I wonder what's going on there. She's not like the other girls. Then the other one, Elena, who is sort of like the more mature big sister type. The other star of school, she's like, everyone loves her. She helps out her family's flower shop. She's got like, you know, 10 bajillion brothers and sisters who she all has to mind. And she intervenes initially, when Hikaru and Lala are having a fight because Hikaru is too headstrong and Lala is too, like, strung up up on data and not being reckless. But then you two gotta get along because you're friends. You're different, but you complement each other. So you should embrace that. So she's like, just super, super cool. I think, her dad is from Spain, probably more Mexico. As for herself, that means Elena is super good at playing football.
Right.
When they're at school and like, you know, everyone's kind of fawning over her, all the girls go, oh, Elena, senpai, I want to be your friend. I wrote a poem about you. And then like, heads up, soccer ball's coming out. And she just, like, does, like, a triple flip in the air and just launches the soccer ball, like, straight back into the guys. So she comes on the scene as well when the other two get attacked by the bad guys, and she helps them out. And what's the, now the little teddy, the little Fuwa, little kind of cute mascot character is in danger, and she kind of dumps in there and grabs it, and it's like, oh, this, like, having, like, things to protect doesn't make you weak, it makes you stronger. I want to protect that smile. And she gets her costume, and she's Cure Soleil, which is based on the sun. And she just got kind of cool fire kicks, and she, again, keeping the soccer team up going, she just, like, makes fireballs and just kind of volleys them into the bad guys and blows them up. Pretty cool. Look forward to seeing more of her. So yeah, it's still pretty fun. It's still getting the gang together. I like how they have an ongoing theme here where all of the bad guy officers are seem to be based on yokai. The first food was a kappa, and the next one they've been dealing with lately is that she's a tengu, or wears like a tengu mask anyway, with the big long nose in it. So we'll see what other guys they conjure up there. We've seen a few of them on the bad guy's home base, where there was like a cyclops lady and a dog man and some other dude, just like vaguely menacing guy who more came out of He-Man than anything else. But yeah, it's still fun. Early days, but I'm along for the ride. I mean, and I'm enjoying it so far.
Good. Talking of yokai. Gegege no Kitaro, episode 45, The Truth Lies in the Thicket of the Manandake. There might be a long wait for a canon episode of Detective Conan, but...
Kiro's got you covered, yes.
Yeah, Kiro's got us covered.
Nezumi Otoko, is there something you want to tell us about? You got a secret family, you didn't, you've been out there, you've been kind of keep under wraps all this time.
Yes, they're called in because people are disappearing in this thicket, particularly, I can't remember what order everything happens. Anyway, essentially...
Kiro's called in, he gets the letter, he kind of sees the Nezumi Otoko's there, and he's like, ah, not this motherfucker, and he's like, hey, Kiro, you finally are here, fucking, I assume it was him who... told them Kid Roll's address or something. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. It's quasi, like, legitimate though, because I'm hired by these guys to, you know, there's something going on in particular that they're all trying to redevelop it into like a tourist attraction, and it involves ghosts and shit. So I thought, well, I know a guy who can help you out right here. So it's definitely a ghost, man. They seem to be like dead believing something that. So I'm not lying to you this time, honestly. He's actually on.
I mean, like, he's probably getting commissioned, sure, but yeah, it is a straight up job for him.
He's being scammed as much as everyone else is in the episode.
Yeah.
Kitaro goes to investigate. He gets his, yokai radar goes off briefly.
Like, as soon as he goes into the bamboo, yeah.
Yeah, but when he's investigating where this guy's father had disappeared from, nothing.
My father mysteriously disappeared in the mysterious bamboo house. He lives in the haunted bamboo thicket.
Yes.
I was like, oh no, there's a bamboo monster coming down the hallway. Whoa. I'm like, wait a minute, this is like a bamboo mannequin just strung up with some string and shit. This isn't a yokai or a ghost at all. What's happening, kid?
Why? It was old man guy who hired me to do this job. And he was using... like, what was it? Like, pre-recorded messages, and it's like, even the Daddy Eyeball's kind of like, oh, when you listen to the spooky voice, it's just really not a spooky voice.
Looking back at it now, yes, it's quite obvious. But he did it for the right reason, because it's like, his father loved his bamboo stickers, it was very precious to him, he just doesn't want to see it get, like, redeveloped, and his wife has made him sold every other asset that they own, but this he wants to hold on to because it's special.
They never
to
make
family.
It clear that it's like his wife is trying to get the money out of him or whatever. But it's clear, like, from the way she acts, it's like, I just want you to sell this piece of shit and make me some money for fur coats and hiring rat faced men. I guess I don't fucking know what she wants out of life. But they do imply that by how she's acting and everything.
So like. There is a legitimate yokai threat here. It was the Manandake, which is like an ancient bamboo spirit, and essentially sends a horde of people who have been turned into bamboo zombies. They're people who disappeared previously, and even when they kind of in Snaria, you could turn into a bamboo zombie yourself.
Hmm.
It's like, shit, we gotta get a bomb on this then.
And as soon as it grabs the Zumi Yoriko, you're like, oh, well, there's a way to reverse it then, because...
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're okay then, that's fine.
That was, I had exactly the same thought
twice. I was like, oh, shit, this is horrifying. And I was like, oh, they'll all be fine then, no problem there.
Yeah, it's basically people who've just been going on walks and things into the thicket have been... So I'm trying to remember how it all... I know how it all ends, but I can't remember how they get there. They have a word...
There's like multiple twists. So the first one is the place is haunted. No, it's not. You're trying to convince people it's haunted. But there is actually a ghost, but the ghost wasn't involved in this thing. But the ghost is very pissed off that the his dad was murdered.
Yes.
Or the, no, yeah. That his dad was murdered by humans.
Yeah. Well, he didn't...
I saw the crime in my bamboo thicket. And I want to get... I'm mad at all humans because one human murdered that human.
Oh, and they got a mark on their left arm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't see his face because he was wearing a motorcycle helmet that says the magical bamboo. But it's like, I can tell you this one identifying thing, which you know some motherfucker that we've introduced you to has.
This is after Kira's giving him a bit of beating up to get everyone's spirits back out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
To stop them from being... bamboo zombies.
Yeah. And then, like, your man is there as well, and I was like, well, as much as I want to get to my dad's murderer, I thought, well, if it had been the police here, they're going to dig the whole place up, and they'll be, like, spoiling my dad's memory to begin with, because the whole ticket would be, like, swarm of people, it'll get a bad reputation, and I don't want that attached to my father's memory. You can understand where I'm coming from, right?
And he's like, I'll be your new friend, bamboo ghost. I will carry on my father's work of protecting this bamboo thicket. And the bamboo ghost is like, oh, that's actually pretty sweet of you, kid. Yeah, sure. I mean, like, for your father's memory, I won't kill all humans. I think that's reasonable.
Everything's wrapped up nice and neatly with a neat little bow.
Except.
Kitaro turned around and was like, one more thing.
Yeah, he's downstairs. We never found out who Daikichi-san's killer was. Kitaro, what's wrong? Kitaro's got a dark face, and then we see the son's also got a dark face, but he's also got a sneer going across his lips. It was all a plan, so they'd never find the body. That's why he didn't want it redeveloped, because if they dig up the thicket, they'll find his father's body.
And he keeps, like, the initial thing of it was like, my father was such a good man. He gave away his fortune to lonely, needy orphans and charities and shit. And it's just like, motherfucker should have given it to me.
Why'd I get nothing? Love.
I left him living in his bamboo thicket house. And apparently he fucking didn't want to leave me all the money. What the fuck? That's not cool. So I killed him in the woods.
Yes.
And nobody knew.
Yeah.
I'll admit this, in the haunted woods. Take that haunted woods. Right, I killed him. It's right, like, dude, don't admit it, in the woods.
He's right at the edge of the thicket.
He was still in the bamboo. Yeah, he was still true, surrounded by bamboo. I was like, just wait till you're just like a few feet away.
Before you can get Sam Raimi'd.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's like, it's your word against mine, and you're a part ghost, and who, and everyone knows ghosts don't exist. So, legally, I'm scot-free.
It ends with him being slowly turned into a bamboo person and dragged back into the thicket.
Like, when all those former bamboo zombies got turned back, were like a bunch of those from like years gone past, because there was a lot of fucking people there.
There was, yes.
There's going to be a lot of goddamn questions. I've been missing for 60 years.
Well, there may be people. Maybe
is World War II still on? Did we win? about that.
I think it could just be people also looking for the people who'd gone missing in the first place.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
There's some good designs in the murderer, his wife, and the developer. They're very dastardly Mizuki-looking people.
Well, I figured like either it was the guy or the wife, because the other guy who looked like Nozomi Otoko for fucking like... I mean, that's a bit of a red herring, but it's kind of like he hasn't really done or said anything, so I can't really suspect him yet.
Yeah, so it couldn't be him. It can only be this guy. Can't trust that rat face, can you?
No, it was the point at which he said about, you know, what a great dad he was giving all his money to charity. And well,
that's a pretty big clue. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the wife already looks like she's in it for the money, so she's pretty high on the list of suspects, which makes her not on the list of suspects. But yeah, no, it's pretty fun, like twists and turns with the murderous ghost plot.
Yeah, and the fact that he got like he was deceiving them. He had an explanation for his deception to hide the real thing he was deceiving them about,
which was a real ghost, and we have to fight the real ghost. And the real ghost has a problem, but they solved that with a happy ending. No, they didn't.
Yeah.
he almost kind of had me there when he has his heartfelt appeal, but that sort of type. Pieces don't add up, and this would be an otherwise like fairly standard episode of anime, but this is Kiro talking about, so I thought I'm waiting for the fucking axe to fall on whoever is actually responsible for this, so I'm kind of glad that it had that mean streak to fucking get this guy got.
Yeah, unless it is yokai might be scary, but humans are even scarier.
Also, don't kill people. Or at the very least, don't admit to killing the person who's the friend of the evil ghost.
In the haunted bamboo thing.
In its haunted forest. Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Is that everything?
Got everything it covered? Is, I believe.
No more Boogie Pop episodes we forgot about.
Well, that's right, there were 17 other ones released at the same fucking time, goddammit.
I quite liked them all being in one big lump, I have to say. I'm not normally a fan of binge watching, but
I don't know. It worked for me, but like I still can't tell if I would have enjoyed them separately and to see the different character perspectives with each episode, or did it work for binging because each episode was from
that's
a different
what
perspective.
I think. Yeah, because yeah. This one felt like it had the most distinct points of view each episode, because the points of view changed a lot of what the story was.
Right.
Like I kind of parceled them out like one by one over like night shift at work. I would say maybe watching that night also lent us, well, I'm kind of half in a daze from monitoring TV for too long into the small hours. It lent us like an extra eerie quality to the proceedings as well. So maybe not ideal for some people out there, but if you can watch it in that manner, I recommend it as well.
Ronnie, we'll be back here next week with more Let's Go JoJo. If you can't get enough of us, though, you can find more podcasts on dynamiteinthebrain.com and secretofthesailormadness.com. Anything else to add before we say goodbye?
More murder, more problems.
What was his character's name from? It's from,
The artist is Crazy Bone.
Yes.
It's from the album Family Scriptures, recent 1996.
I've heard the name, I don't think I've ever heard any of his songs.
So it's, it's Mo Murder from, Bone Thugs and Harmony. It seems to be a pretty popular, title, I think, from... Various things. So there's a few different variations of it, but the first one you got was from Crazy Bone, Mo Murder.
Yeah, and according to Wikipedia, Scarecrow's an allusion to the song The Scarecrow by Pink Floyd and their 1967 debut album The Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Anyway, we talk about Boogie Pop enough. There's so much more stuff we'd missed, like where the origin of the song that Boogie Pop plays on entering.
Oh, the little whistle in bit, yeah.
Yeah. Just happened to
be. I keep
be
thinking it's the fucking start of a Rammstein track, but then the fucking thing changes. What the fuck Rammstein thing is it? It's really bugging me. Ah, dear.
Rightio, we'll be back next week with more of this nonsense. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.